Today, we are diving deep into a world where modern financial compliance, well, it's not really about filing paperwork anymore.
No, not at all.
It's a fully automated, high security challenge. We're looking at the technical blueprints for accessing the Iranian taxpayer system, which the docs call USRAKJU.
Right, and that's the core mandate.
Yeah.
This isn't optional, and it's definitely not manual.
Okay.
It requires a mandatory, secure REST API workflow. And this system, I mean, it's designed to reject anything that's less than perfect, both in security and structure.
So it's demanding real-time cryptographic validation on every single interaction.
On everything, yeah.
Let's just define the stakes here. The entire foundation, this whole cryptographic identity piece, it seems to rest on the unique tax ID, or USRAKJU, USHA.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't prove the authenticity and the integrity of your transaction right down to the packet level using these really robust security protocols, then compliance is just impossible.
It's all about digital trust and accountability. You know, the system acts as this massive central collector. It's gathering invoices. It's performing automated real-time validation checks.
Against legal standards, I assume.
Exactly. And handling all the status inquiries. And like you said, every single step hinges on digital signatures and standard REST API interactions.
Okay, so before we get into the heavy cryptography, we should probably talk about what taxpayers are actually sending.
Yeah, the content.
The documentation reveals a huge variety of transaction patterns, or EIF, that have to be specifically tracked. And this suggests to me the government isn't just interested in a total sales figure, but the type of commerce that's actually happening.
Absolutely. The technical patterns are incredibly diverse, and it shows this really granular approach to tracking the economy.
So what are we talking about?
Well, we're looking at specific templates for standard sales, obviously, but also these specialized patterns for currency sales for gold, jewelry, and platinum.
Wow, that's specific.
Oh, yeah. And specific formats for contract work or payment kari, utility bills, and even logistical flows like exports and bills of lading.
And sensitive materials too, right?
Right, alongside things like oil and petroleum products. Each template is designed to make sure all the required legal information for that specific transaction type is included.
And the level of required detail here is what's genuinely surprising. I mean, it moves way beyond standard accounting data. It's pulling in elements of logistics and insurance.
Exactly. The unique tax ID is, of course, mandatory across all the patterns. But for certain transactions, the system requires this specialized data that, you know, most conventional invoicing platforms just wouldn't capture.
Like what? Give me an example.
Okay, take the transport patterns.
Yeah.
You see mandatory fields for the specific fleet number, the Olsensteg AC.
The actual truck.
The actual truck. The driver's national or foreign ID, detail info about the goods being transported, the goods ID, and even the insurance policy ID.
What's fascinating here is the implication. This isn't just tax collection. It feels like a convergence of tax law, transportation regulation, maybe even customs.
That's a powerful insight.
They're integrating logistics data directly into the tax compliance stack.
By mandating these specific fields, the system can validate the entire commercial life cycle of a product. It just simplifies real-time regulatory compliance.
And we see that on the tax calculation side, too.
We do. We see this validation complexity applied right to the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the documentation explicitly sets the VAT rate to zero for export patterns.
Mm-hmm.
It recognizes that exemption immediately, right at the point of invoice creation.
And conversely, I saw that certain regulated or special goods are immediately flagged.
Yes, exactly. Goods that are designated as special or potentially harmful things like kerosene, tobacco products, sugary drinks, precious metals, or pollutants, they all have to adhere to special publicly announced tax rates.
So the system is checking for that.
It is. The validation routines ensure that if you submit an invoice for one of these goods, the tax rate applied must match the announced rate or the submission will just fail.
So it's a compliance checker and a tax calculator at the same time.
All in one.
Now we move to the gatehouse. We have all this complex data prepared, but before the system accepts any of it, the client needs to prove its identity.
And the server needs to provide a secure environment.
Right. And the security stack is built on the foundation of the HOAC standards, JSON Web Signatures, JWS, and JSON Web Encryption, JWE.
You can think of this entire process as a highly structured, time-limited digital handshake. Authentication is never passive. It starts with step one. The client has to request a one-time challenge string. They call it a nonce.
A nonce, a number used once. It's essentially a temporary disposable password just for this one session.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. This nonce is highly time sensitive.
How sensitive?
It has a limited lifespan that can range from a pretty tense 10 seconds up to 200 seconds. The default is usually 30.
So if your application has any latency issues or just delays in processing, that authentication token expires before you even get to use it.
It's gone. Which brings us to step two, generating the authentication token.
This is a signed JWT, a JSON web signature.
Right. And the taxpayer's own private key is used here to sign a payload that includes that nonce, proving the request came from the legitimate verified source.
And that private key has to be managed securely.
The specification is extremely strict on this. The key must be loaded in the PKCS TAF8 format.
Why that format specifically?
Well, that format isn't arbitrary. It ensures the private key is managed securely, often requiring robust password protection, which is, you know, completely non-negotiable for authenticating against a national tax system.
Let's drill down on the signature requirements for that JWS header, because this is where the precision really comes in.
It is entirely prescriptive. They are not allowing for various signing algorithms.
So it's one way or the highway?
Pretty much. They mandate one specific secure pen, RSA PKCS 1V15, using SHA 256, which is commonly known as RS 256.
And you have to embed your identity in there, too.
You do, right in the header, by including the taxpayer's X.509 certificate, the BY5C field, in Base64 format. This is your digital ID card, confirming who signed the token.
Wait, this sounds incredibly fragile. If the entire process relies on the client's clock being synchronized perfectly down to the second, what happens in the real world? Client system clocks, they inevitably drift, even by a millisecond.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a buffer, or is that instant rejection causing massive friction?
That friction is intentional. The security is designed to be unforgiving. The signature time, CT, has to adhere exactly to the UTC format. IYY MM DDD THNAIR MADELO OSCs.
Wow.
Any deviation, any missing component in that JWS header, or any timing mismatch, and the system instantly rejects your identity verification. It's a very explicit trade-off. High security requires perfect execution from the client side.
We're authenticated, but we only have a temporary pass. Now for the core mission, submitting the actual invoice. We're moving from proving identity to securing the payload. And this is a multi-layered security envelope. You sign it, then you encrypt the signature, and only then do you submit it.
The first essential step in preparing that envelope, step three, is purely infrastructural. You have to retrieve the server's public encryption key.
How do you do that?
It's done using that live temporary JWT token you just got via a dedicated API endpoint. The system returns the key, which is absolutely vital, as this key is used only for encryption. It ensures that only the tax system can decrypt the final message.
Then comes step four, signing the invoice, the raw invoice data, that whole JSON object with the header, the body, the payment details, is signed by the taxpayer. This is another JWS packet. Why sign it before you encrypt it?
You sign it to guarantee the document's authenticity and integrity. The signature proves two things. First, that it hasn't been tampered with since the taxpayer created it.
And second, that it definitely came from them.
That it definitely came from the verified taxpayer. It follows the exact same stringent JWS rules as the authentication token RS256 algorithm, taxpayer certificate included, and that strict UTC time signature.
Okay, so now the signed invoice, the authentic document, is just sitting there. Step five is the mandatory encryption layer. This is where the JWE standard comes in to ensure total secrecy.
That's right. The entire signed JWS string must be encrypted into a JWE packet using the server's public key we just retrieved.
So JWS is the signature proving it's real.
And JWE is the vault that ensures only the government server can open it. This process uses a really powerful cryptographic combination.
Can you break that down for us?
Sure. It's actually an ingenious system for both speed and security. They use RSA OEP 256 for the key management and A256 GCM for the content encryption itself.
What does that mean in practice?
It means the client doesn't encrypt the huge invoice data using the slow public key cryptography, the RSA part. Instead, the client generates a random fast symmetric key, an AES 256-bit key, and only encrypts that tiny key using the powerful slow RSA algorithm and the server's public key.
I see.
Then the actual large signed invoice is encrypted very quickly using that symmetric key and A256 GCM.
So we have asymmetric encryption on a symmetric key, which in turn encrypts the payload. It's a very common, highly efficient, and incredibly secure chain of custody.
Exactly. The final JWE is then serialized into five dot separated parts. The header, the encrypted key, the initialization vector, or the fourth, the ciphertext, and the authentication tag.
And all five parts are needed.
All five are required for the server to properly identify the encryption methods, decrypt the symmetric key, and finally verify the encrypted message's authenticity.
And finally, step six, submission.
The final step.
That entire secure encrypted JW packet is bundled with a unique request trace ID. That's a UID the client generates, and the fiscal ID, and sent to the invoice endpoint. It's quite astonishing that a single request can contain up to 1,000 of these individually signed and encrypted packets.
Yeah, that really demonstrates the expected volume and efficiency of this system.
Now, the submission goes through.
Right. Once that submission is successful, the taxpayer gets a reference number, or OSHENCHICH. But this doesn't mean the compliance job is done.
Not over yet.
No. The invoice still needs to undergo final processing and validation on the server side, so tracking its status is mandatory.
So after all that cryptographic heavy lifting, you still have to babysit the invoice. What are the options for tracking it?
You have three primary methods to query where the submission stands. First, the standard way, is via the system-issued reference number. Second, you can use your own internal request trace ID that you generated before submission. And third, you can query by a time range. Although the system enforces really tight search windows, usually 24 hours for a general query, or up to 1 week if you're searching by specific IDs.
And the status response gives you that critical feedback, letting you know if the invoice is success, failed.
Right, with detailed reasons if it failed.
Or in progress, or just not found.
And what's key is the final security check. When an invoice comes back with a success status during an inquiry, the response itself includes a specific sign field.
What's that?
This field contains a JWS that's signed by the core taxpayer system itself. This digital signature validates the result, proving that the status update came directly from the authority and hasn't been tampered with. It's validation on top of validation. It closes the loop of trust.
That addresses data integrity perfectly. But what about the final legal status? I mean, beyond just a successful submission, has the invoice actually been legally accepted?
That requires checking a separate API endpoint, the one for the taxpayer's dossier. It's inquiry invoice status.
And that gives you the final word.
That gives you the ultimate legal outcome, like approved or rejected, and critically, the Article 6 status. This status is paramount because it explicitly tells the taxpayer if their legally permitted sales limit has been exceeded.
So for a CFO or a compliance officer, that's probably the most actionable piece of information.
It's everything. It determines if they are still within the legal bounds for their fiscal period. We also see a separate mechanism for tracking payment details. So if the sale was deferred or cash-based, you can post the paid amount, the date, and the payment method, like check, cash, or POS.
So what does this all mean at the end of the day? This system demonstrates an absolute institutional push toward mandatory end-to-end secure digital commerce. The complexity we just detailed, JWS-JWE, the RS-256 algorithm, RSA-OEP-256, it isn't just technical flair.
No, it's the non-negotiable cost of compliance. The key takeaway is realizing that the whole system relies on this perfect chain of trust built on time. If you miss a single step, like the precise loading format for your private key, that PKCH tag 8, or the exact date formatting in the signature header, the entire pipeline just fails.
So it requires robust, perfectly timed automation.
It does. Tax compliance has essentially become a matter of cryptographic engineering excellence.
We've broken down how electronic invoicing is being secured at a national level. Now think about the broader implications. If national financial data is secured using these highly specific client-side cryptographic standards, what does that mean for the future of global commercial data standards?
That's a good question.
Well, we soon see client-side cryptography become mandatory for all business-to-business transactions, ensuring authenticity and confidentiality across the entire commercial supply chain worldwide. It's something to consider as these systems inevitably influence global commerce.